Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
Lost and Found. I'm Rebecca Lieb.
I'm Jason Horton.
And this is Ghost Town.
January 31st, 1993, a mother and daughter arrived home after a weekend in Dallas to discover that their husband and father, David Glenn Lewis, was missing. Where David was and how he was found would span thousands of miles and would take almost 11 years to solve. This is the strange case of David Glenn Lewis. On that same day, David Glenn Lewis left work early at his law firm, stating he was not feeling well and would be heading home. Records indicate that he bought gas, and then he taught his college class that evening until 10 p.m. When they returned on January 31st at 11:15 p.m., they discovered David was absent. His car was gone. However, his wedding ring and watch were left on the kitchen counter. The VCR was still recording the Super Bowl. There were freshly made sandwiches in the fridge. Since there were no signs of foul play, David's wife assumed he may have worked late or watched the game elsewhere. She filed a missing persons report the next day. What no one knew is that 1,600 miles away in Yakima County, Washington, several people spotted an individual on Route 24 near Moxie wandering on the road. Just as quickly as he was seen, he was dead. Police arrived to find the body of a middle-aged man dressed in military-style clothing and work boots. During the examination, there were no traces of alcohol or drugs. Investigators suspected he was the victim of an accidental hit-and-run. He had no identification on him, and his identity remained unknown. On the 2nd of February, the day after John Doe was discovered, the investigation into David Glenn Lewis's disappearance in Amarillo intensified when investigators located David's car. The red Ford Explorer was found parked outside the Potter County Courts building downtown. Beneath the floor mat, police discovered David's house and car keys. His checkbook, credit cards, and driver's license were found in the car as well, but according to his wife, that was typical. He would leave things in his glove compartment. The things under the floor mats, different story. David's wedding ring and watch were found in his home. Despite the recovery of these items, the discovery of David's car and belongings did not provide any significant answers, beside the fact that it's all very strange.
Yes, yes, yes.
The investigation did uncover an intriguing detail. Prior to his death, David had confided in his wife about feeling threatened but refused to divulge any specifics.
That's interesting.
David was scheduled to travel to Dallas a week after he vanished for a deposition in a conflict of interest case involving his former law firm and a wealthy client.
Oh.
He had assured his father that he would not cover up any wrongdoing from his former firm and planned to, quote, tell the truth, whoever it hurts.
Oh, shit.
So he was at odds with his former law firm.
So did he think, his former law firm was maybe putting something out on him? Maybe he left his ring and watch and got into some army clothes. He kind of thought he was defending himself, kind of fugued out maybe.
The first ticket bought on the 31st was from a flight to Dallas to Amarillo, the same route David's wife and daughter took on the day they returned home to find him missing. The second ticket purchased on the next day, on the 1st of February, was for a flight from LAX to Dallas. The same day John Doe's body was found in Washington. The purpose of these tickets remains a mystery, and it's unclear if they were used at this point, which it was pre-9/11. Flying was easy. Technology was a little bit different.
Yeah.
I still think, did this person get on a flight? Did they cash in this ticket?
Yeah.
But I guess they're also, at that point, John Doe is John Doe, and David is just
a missing person, yeah. And also, this is happening, these two cases are happening simultaneously, but like a very far amount of miles apart, you know?
You would not make a connection.
Why would you ever make a connection?
Did David intend to use them? If so, how did he travel from Amarillo to Dallas, a five-hour drive away? Did he plan to return from Washington to Texas using LAX as a stopover? And if so, why did he go to Washington in the first place? No one knows any of this stuff. These tickets, anything that's happened with him, nobody knows. It just looked like he's like, oh, I'm taping the Super Bowl. I just made some sandwiches. Oops, I got to go out
for a second. That's what it looks like.
I mean, it really reminds me of the Unsolved Mysteries reboot episode one, where it's like in the middle of, there's all these strange things that don't quite connect, but you know, like something bigger is going on, but you don't quite know what that is.
Despite no new leads emerging, the criminal investigation into David's disappearance was officially closed after 11 months.
Wow.
We fast forward to 2002 after this break. Hi, hello, how are you?
Hello.
How are you doing?
Hello, hello, hello.
We call this the check-in.
Fancy seeing you here.
Your parents and grandparents probably call it something different.
Yeah.
But we call it a check-in.
A check-in. That's right.
We call it just the casual check-in.
Just check in. Just us. Just your cool friends.
Yeah, young. So young.
Yeah.
Very young friends.
This is what we do.
Yeah, this is how.
Vaping in the corner.
Yeah.
Talking about, I don't know, cool music.
I got my
iPhone. Post Malone.
We want to thank anyone who's listening, supporting us, spreading the good word of Ghost Town. We thank you every single week, and we'll never, ever stop.
We won't stop.
We're full of thanks, and we will never run out of thanks.
Even if you don't want it and hate it.
Yeah.
We'll
run out of a lot, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Woo. Yeah.
And just like Post Malone, we love to thank our government. Mm-hmm. That's so Post Malone-y of us.
Oh, it's true.
We got a couple of mayors. We got a couple of mayors that love the newest, modernist thing.
Mm.
They love it. And they throw it right in your face. They got the newest...
Modern.
Hottest thing. Walking into the party with a fidget spinner. Just spinning it round and round and round. Like, look what I got.
Ooh, who's that guy?
That mayor is Emma Hopkins.
Hello.
Just cruising on in with a 2-liter of Crystal Pepsi.
Ooh. Oh, I see.
No alcohol for me, thanks. I got Crystal Pepsi. They're like, meth? No. Pepsi.
No.
It's not a joke.
I intend to chug this later.
Yeah, it's not. I'm not being funny with drugs.
Yeah,
no,
this
it's
is my lifestyle.
Crystal Pepsi.
Mm-hmm.
That's Casey Weber.
Hello.
Just cruising on in the party with a compact disc titled, now that's what I call music, volume 2.
2?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. They're like, the first one was so good. The second one's got to be
relic.
Pretty good.
God, they're on like their 50s now.
Yeah, it's like you want to listen to probably Usher, maybe... O-Town.
Yeah, O-Town's big. What, that Sex and Candy song, I think, is on every one of those. Playground.
Marcy's Playground. It's all on there.
They know, because they listen to it.
You can thank DJ Matthew Clemens Leray for that.
Hello.
Cruising on in with a Swatch Watch. What time is it?
Whoa.
Check out my Swatch Watch.
Oh, I hope it's like one of those like splatter painted ones.
Yeah, it's got the protective.
Oh, the
cover you had on the Swatch.
It's like,
you think
a bumper?
iPhones like and stuff like no, they're not the pioneers of having protective stuff. Swatch is.
Because you are a high intensity, high impact person, and you need a watch to fit your life.
What time is it? Well, you can ask Marissa Rothermel.
Hello.
Cruising on in, just rocking a text on a Sidekick.
Nice.
Flipping it up and side kicking it.
Yeah, you flip it up, you do the little tiny buttons.
Yeah.
And you flip it back down.
Down, and you're like, what were you saying?
Uh huh. And they're like, is that bedazzled? And you're like, yeah, it's a special occasion.
Yeah. And you know what's bedazzled with? The name Kelly Meehan.
Hello.
Cruising on in, sun's in her eyes, so she's rocking a hat. Sweet Von Dutch hat.
Ooh.
Check out my Von Dutch.
Nice. You got the breathable webbing on.
Yeah,
it,
the
on
brim
the
is all worked. It just fits.
Worked at like
a glove, but it's a hat.
It's frayed. Oof.
It's frayed, but it was purchased that way, of course.
Yeah, you didn't do that.
But your lifestyle does kind of it coincide.
It lends itself to your brand.
That's Kat Jozell.
Hello.
Cruising on in with a DVD box set of Roswell.
Jesus.
Does everyone want to watch how many seasons of three seasons of Roswell? I'll say three. Does that sound right?
Two to four. Yeah, 2 to 4 for sure.
Listen, aliens are back, baby. Let's watch some Roswell. Let's Roz it up.
Who's got a DVD player?
Yeah.
High res.
Yeah.
High def.
Yeah. There's also the director's commentary.
Nice.
Some cast commentaries.
Whose birthday is it? What a treat.
Well, who made this party rock, alien style. It's hot aliens, I guess they are.
Yeah.
Is that what they are? They're hot aliens?
I don't know. They're all just a bunch of... Every CW show of that era is just a bunch of white people in a row looking up.
Yeah, yeah. They're all... They have no powers, right? They're just...
I don't know.
Either aliens are talking to aliens or they're hooking up with aliens.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever.
Pale.
You can just ask Ashley Madison for that one.
Hello.
And our governor just flying in. Huh. American Airlines? I don't think so. Delta? No thanks. Brought back TWA. Just cruising
Whoa,
in on that.
Resurrected a whole fucking airline. That was gone
for
many
long
years.
Time.
She's like, you want to see retro?
Yeah.
I literally recreated and rehired all the old TWA people to work on my new TWA.
They're like,
airlines.
I'm 91. She's like, get to work.
Exactly.
When I purchased the airline, I purchased you. You don't know the agreement you signed when you signed up with TWA. So you got a 95-year-old flying the plane. I mean, the youngest person is 77.
Just, it's truly very impressive.
And the plane crashes right into the party that everyone's at.
Oh, hell yeah. Just old people careening out of the TWA plane.
Yeah, they're fine, by the way.
It's a party for the fucking century.
They're like, I'm going to need a chug of that Crystal Pepsi. That's our governor, Avian Noble. If you want no ads, no chit-chat, bonus episode, 7 days free. You want to listen to just the good stuff? Come on over. Patreon.com/ghosttownpod. Now, we got a mystery.
That's right. That's right. Let's get back into it.
In 2002, police informed local media that the plane tickets purchased in David's name led them to believe he left home voluntarily. I don't know how you can't follow up on this if there's no way to confirm. Did a human being check in with the tickets? Or are they just like, oh, this is just somebody who just wanted to skip out in his family and leave all his stuff? In 2003, 10 years after John Doe's body was found in Washington, Detective Pat Ditter read a newspaper series entitled Without a Trace about missing person cases. In the series, he read about the flaws in missing persons investigations. And of course, as time has gone by, things have advanced. And flaws in the NCIC's, which is the National Crime Information Center's computer system at the time, inspired by the thought that possible identities for unidentified victims may have fallen through the cracks of computer databases. And I'm sure this is probably something that's been ongoing.
Yeah.
Probably the most refined it is right now. But technology at that time was starting to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
Within a week, there was a breakthrough. A list of potential victims who roughly matched the description of the Yakima County John Doe. One in particular, a Doe Network entry for David Glenn Lewis, complete with picture, caught Ditter's eye. The picture of David was similar to the one of Ditter, though he was put off by the lack of glasses, which were, I think, initially not found near the body.
Mm.
I guess a Clark Kent Superman thing. It's
exactly.
Like, I had to,
he wears glasses.
Glasses come off. Again, it's probably more nuanced than what I'm explaining, but
yeah. Well, it's also like it might be a convenient way for law enforcement to not do their job.
Yeah. Until Ditter discovered that a pair of glasses had been found.
Oh, okay. Great.
Ditter went to access the personal effects. He's found the glasses wrapped up in the military-style clothing he had been wearing when he was killed, which I understand that is kind of a thrown-off thing. You think it's like, oh, this person's like a hunter or whatever. Definitely not David's normal
look. He's a
look.
Professor.
Yeah.
He's a lawyer and a professor. Yeah. That seems, again, out of the ordinary.
Now believing the connection between John Doe and David Glenn Lewis may be more than a coincidence, Ditter got into contact with Amarillo Police, sent them the items that could be used for DNA analysis, one of the boots the victim had been wearing, and a tissue sample preserved since 1993. David's mother, Esther, provided her own DNA sample to test against the unidentified man. In October 2004, 11 years after he went missing, David Glenn Lewis was positively identified as the deceased man found on Route 24, 1,600 miles from home.
Wow.
It is unknown why David would have headed to Washington, and no one has been able to offer any insight into a connection, what had happened, and why he left the area. As far as what happened is drivers saw him just wandering in the middle of the road. And some people, you know, that are from the area go, it's presented in a way that it's just this kind of country road, but it's not. It's a high trafficked area.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have a man dressed up in military fatigues and work boots wandering in the middle of the road. Somebody drove by him and they went to pull over to be like, hey, there's a guy in the road. And by that point, he already got hit by a Camaro that was considered a hit and run. Some people say that, oh, was that somebody out to to murder him.
Yeah.
So this idea that some people, and we talked about the unsolved mysteries where everyone's like, the conspiracy, mm-hmm, the conspiracy. Mm-hmm. And maybe we don't know. Other people consider is of, you said, a fugue state, mental illness.
Yeah.
What I've gathered in everything that I've looked at, there's a lot of like information, but not a lot of information, mm-hmm, is that it sounds like somebody that may have been paranoid, mm-hmm, about something and then did things to, I'm going to buy a plane ticket here, I'm going to buy a plane ticket there. I'm going to leave this here, I'm going to leave that there, in a constant state of throwing people off my scent. Mm. For what reason? Maybe some, maybe absolutely none. I'm sure if you talk to people that knew him, maybe everyone would say, this is really totally out of the ordinary. Or would somebody say, he's been getting more and more paranoid over time? Pretty young, you know, he's, yeah, a young person,
also,
40.
He was still functional. You know, he was still teaching and practicing. At the same time, along with like unsolved mysteries, it's like, yeah, that guy was still working too. Is it the sort of thing where he thought he was being watched, or he had like a bag packed next to him where it's like, he at a certain point, if he gets some kind of like feeling that something's happening, he grabs his bag with his fatigues in them. He's got his plane tickets. He goes and, you know, he has to do something. Or this like kind of paranoid fueled kind of escape, or, you know, clearing of his name, or trying to figure something out, something like that.
Let's just say you know somebody is out to get you, mm-hmm, and that is absolutely happening. We'll just say, well, no, that's the truth. Mm-hmm. What is the impetus to go and be like, I'm going to just walk in the middle of a highway? What gets you to that point? Like, what gets you is like, I need to walk in the center of a road, mm-hmm, a busy road. I don't know what that is. Are you, mm-hmm, running from something? Because it wasn't like flagging down cars and going, hey, listen, I'm, yeah, being chased. Was he paranoid where he's like, I got to go and I got to change my look. I got to, mm-hmm, wear fatigues to blend in with – this is, mm-hmm, things that I'm just surmising, and I have really no basis on it except like if you had to ask, what does it sound like?
Yeah.
Also, people found it very interesting that his wife was gone to go shopping that weekend with their young daughter. It's like, mm-hmm, – is that maybe it's, you know, let's think, it's like, hey, listen, you're going to watch the Super Bowl here. We're going to go. You don't know anything about the relationship. She could be like, yeah, I'm just going. He's like, I'm going to stay here and I got work. Or is it a thing like, I need to get out of this house. You're like freaking me out. Some people say, what a coincidence. I don't know how she orchestrated a human being to be 1,600 miles away wandering in the middle of a road.
Yeah, that doesn't feel like a domestic conflict to
me.
No,
it sounds like, and you know, the only indication I've seen, this maybe there's more, this probably is more, is that I don't know if he just said once, he's like, I think I'm in danger. And she's like, ugh. I got to imagine that's – if that's one thing, what else is true? Mm. Probably a lot of other things are probably true in that, but no one knows. It's always a thing like maybe if a little more police work was done.
I know. I keep
– how do you not know if you want to know, like, did that celebrity get on a plane? You would have found out.
Totally. Totally. And we are also talking about two very separate jurisdictions, mm, at a very specific period in time, which I was also thinking too, you know, CODIS was probably just being created at this point. So it's like you're not going to be – you know, it's going to be a cold case for a while. But the idea of like there's a missing guy, you probably can get his fingerprints off of something. You probably get the fingerprints off this dead guy and probably match them pretty quickly, like without that like – kind of like high technology, you know, you need different departments communicating with each other. And how would you, from like Texas, right, to like Seattle?
Yeah, to Washington,
you know, like,
yeah,
that's like kind of that's a long ways journey for sure. But with better detective work, you could have maybe put together the fact that like there was a plane ticket purchase that like, you know, going there via LAX. I think there's ways that you could have helped kind of create better
Well, they
webs.
Knew the plane. It just got, it'd be like, hey, who worked here on this day? Did this person, mm-hmm, look at the photo of this person? Do you remember if this person got on the plane? Was this ticket checked in? I'm sure airlines keep track of that because they want to make, you know, fill seats and make money, and that's, mm-hmm, their business. They'd be like, we don't know who comes on the plane or who leaves. You know what I mean? It's the early 90s. It's not like the first airplane.
Yeah.
The first commercial air flight.
Well, he had no transportation, as you know, when he was in Washington. So he must have been on foot for a while. I don't know how far away.
It makes me think when he left his car at the courthouse that, mm-hmm, it's, oh, where we got to find David Glenn Lewis. Oh, his car is at the, he must be around here. I feel like things are done to like leave smoke screens, these little smoke screens, which in a way kind of worked.
Yeah, no, it, obviously, you know, like, cause we still don't know what has happened, but I do wonder if it's something with his boss. Again, like Unsolved Mysteries, keep going back to that, where something like, what is the connection between these two places? Like starting with the places and how kind of reverse engineering like what their relationship could be. Or maybe it's something, maybe it's random and this guy fucking had a psychotic break and left his sandwiches in the fridge and the recording of the Super Bowl and randomly got to where he was and was
hit by a car. Like a phone call came in, like something had to interrupt that. Again, unless he's, everything's a smokescreen. He's like, Super Bowl, I'm going to have, this is going to be recording. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to have the sandwiches in. Even the way we're telling this, is it the whole thing like a smokescreen that he always, always had? Or is it just something that was like, this interrupted my world?
But that feels very logical and kind of premeditated and very planned and very intelligent versus like having the end of this person's journey be being hit by a car on a busy freeway.
Yeah, like, what makes most sense to me is paranoia.
Yeah.
An extreme form of paranoia. We talk about these things. You don't always hear, like, wow, that sounds really odd, assuming that you know that this person's life, they would have never, ever done any of this, and there's never been indication of it until right this second.
Yeah.
Or is it sort of a long time coming?
Yeah. Yeah, I think better police work. They talked to his wife, but who else did they talk to? Who, his doctor, you know, like his students, like what was it like being in a class with this person?
Why,
you know,
did he leave work early? Like, what has it been like? Has he been leaving work early a lot?
We need more information, and I can only assume that like a lot of these questions are because the police didn't do a great job.
I don't know what the staffing is like, and they're like, oh, we have to prioritize things, or we just want to close cases.
But certainly incredibly interesting, and the details, like all of these cases, we talk about a lot of missing persons cases, mysterious circumstances. These details are what stick with you around it, and they make it really compelling.